Now Owen's going to go all the way to the hoop. Layup. Good! Owen with perhaps the final nail in the Riley County coffin. 56-40 Beloit. Here's Fultz with 8 seconds on the clock. Driving is Hopper. Dishes underneath. The shot up and good. And Riley County within 15, and that is your ball game. Beloit moves on to the sub-state semifinals with a 57-42 victory tonight over Riley County.
And the Beloit boys now a 10-win improvement from last year. Went 5-13. They're now 15-6 on the year as they were able to knock off Riley County last night. Beloit never trailed in the game. Led 6-0 to start. Led 16-8 at the end of one. And then led by 9 multiple times in the second quarter. Riley County seemed to always have an answer. Pulled it within 5 or 6. At halftime, Beloit led by 8. Riley County scored the first 6 of the third quarter, make it 33-31. Things were tight, and you thought, oh boy, you know, how's Beloit going to handle this? And they handled it with flying colors. They went on a 9-0 spurt, went up 42-31, and Riley County would get within 6 one more time early in the fourth, 42-36. But Beloit, too much down the stretch. Bryce Beiser with a big game with 15 points. And Quinn Islett had 9 points and really was aggressive on the glass. They were our co-SNS Drug and Home Health athletes of the game. Quinn also had a key three-pointer in the first half. And Wyatt Brockman with 13 points and a couple of threes. Caleb Burks with 10 points and a couple of threes. And 10 points for Owen Eilert. So balanced offense attack for Beloit. And their defense was very good last night as well. Held some of the best players for Riley County in check. And the Beloit boys win 57-42. The block of the game for Atron Block and Beloit went to Bryce Beisner. And the connection of the game was Beisner to Quinn Eilert for a backdoor, or not a backdoor cut, just a nice cut to the bucket. And Bryce was doubled, hit Quinn for the bucket and the three-point play. And then later in the game, the a chance to kind of really finish it off, and it was a nice pass to Owen, who cut to the bucket when Bryce was doubled, and he got a layup as well. Those were our Cunningham telephone cable connections of the game as the Beloit boys win by a final score of 57-42. They will play Council Grove in Minneapolis coming up on Thursday at 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:45 on Z96.3 Lake, and our live video stream at nckssports.com. Other action last night, Dusty.
Yes, as you mentioned in that sub-state, Council Grove did get the win. And then Southeast Salem beat Minneapolis 49-20. And Smoky Valley overalls were 61-31 in the other two first-round games. So it'll be Smoky Valley against Southeast Salem Thursday as well. And then on Monday in Class 2A Girls Plainville sub-state, the Smith Center girls, a 67-12 win as the number one seed over the 8 Plainville. Smith Center moves on to the semifinals Thursday at Plainville in that 2A sub-state. They'll take on Hoxie. The 4-seeded Letty Indians beat the Oakley squad, the number 5 seed, 51-40. And then on the bottom side of that bracket, it was Trigover Hill City, 49-16. And also St. Francis Shylin beat Ellis, 51-36. So Trigo and St. Francis Shylin, the other matchup in 2A girls, that Plainville sub-state. Also, the Sacred Heart and Republic County girls saw their seasons come to a close last night. Sacred Heart lost in the first round of the Republic County sub-state to Bennington, 46-44. And Republic County lost on the road at Valley Heights, 70-15. So again, Sacred Heart and Republic County seasons are finished. If you missed any of those scores or want to see the brackets for high school sub-state basketball and results from last night heading into tonight, you can check out nckssports.com.
All right, wrestling locker room chats?
Yeah, wrestling locker room chats tonight. We'll chat with head coaches Beloit and Smith Center. We've already wrapped up really the season with Jason Noll, but we'll hear a couple cuts from him from our last interview with him last week. So wrestling locker room chats, Beloit Osborne and Smith Center finish up tonight. We'll begin those around 5:15 on Kitty Country 94 and kittycountry94.com here this evening. So stay tuned for all that.
That's all you got local-wise?
Yeah, we'll probably preview. I'm guessing
all right.
You want to preview tonight.
I just want to make sure we got everything covered here.
Yep.
All right. Tonight, the Beloit girls will be at Council Grove to take on the Council Grove Braves. They are 10-10. Beloit girls are 9-11. They've lost 4 in a row. They haven't won a game since February the 4th, although that is misleading as Beloit had 2 Friday nights off during that span. But still, it's been a while since Beloit girls have got a W, and certainly they need one tonight to keep their season alive. And both these teams very much alike, according to Council Grove head coach Eric Carter.
To me, Beloit's very similar to us. They might not pressure as much defensively as far as, you know, full court, half court style, but I mean, they try to get down and guard you in the half, man to man. They got rotation help there as well. Offensively, they look like they're trying to get it inside 15 foot to try to score as well. So I mean, I see, besides, you know, a little bit different defensive philosophy, offensively, I see a lot of similarities between us. They're a little bigger than us. They definitely got some bigger kids than what we have.
So Council Grove, they don't shoot a lot of threes. They want to attack. They want to get to the rim. They want to get 15-foot shots or closer. Beloit, meanwhile, really, when they have played well, they've made three-point shots. And then during their four-game losing streak, teams have run them off the three-point line at times. When they've had some open looks, they've not been able to knock them down. That's something certainly that Beloit needs to change tonight when they go to Council Grove. Shauna Remus likes the matchup and knows that the schedule that her team played, she believes, will help them tonight on the road at Council Grove.
I like the matchup. I mean, what I have seen, I think we match up extremely well against them. And our season has been very difficult in terms of who we have played. You know, we've played about five or six ranked teams throughout the season. So I think that's in our favor. Every game we played has been very difficult. So our kids have seen tough competition, and they understand what a tough game it's going to be. And we're going to have to go down on their court and steal one from them. And I think they're ready for that. I think they're up for the challenge, and we're excited about the opportunity.
So the Beloit girls tonight, they will be the road team. They're the 5 seed. They'll take on the 4 seed Council Grove this evening. Pregame at 5:45 on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Live video stream at NCKSSports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. If Beloit would win tonight, more than likely they'll play Southeast Saline, the 1 seed, who's playing Lions this evening. And that would be a semifinal on Friday at either 6 or 7:30 in Minneapolis, and be a third matchup for Beloit against Southeast. But first things first, they need to win tonight against Council Grove. Other games in the area tonight?
Yes, in that same sub-state, as we mentioned, it'll be Lions at Southeast Saline on the top side of that bracket, and then Ellsworth is at Smoky Valley, Riley County at Minneapolis. And then the Smith Center boys are opening sub-state in Class 2A tonight. They're the number 8 seed at 1-19, taking on top seed at Hill City, who's 16-4 in Hill City tonight. St. Francis Island at Plainville, Oakley at Trigo, Ellis at Hawks, the other games in that sub-state. And then 2A boys, Republic County sub-state. Republic County's at Bennington tonight, and Sacred Heart is hosting El Saline. So those are the matchups for high school sub-state action here this evening from the NCKSSports.com area. Again, all those are brackets and schedules for the area teams are posted there at NCKSSports.com, right at your fingertips for tonight's high school hoops.
All right. Last night, as we mentioned, the Beloit boys with the win over Riley County. Ryan Eilert, after the game, pleased with his team, when they happy that they didn't back down when things got tight. It was a 2-point game in the third quarter.
I thought all night long, you know, even the first half, felt like we could extend it more than we did, and yet they hit a few shots and cut into our lead. But I thought our kids all night long responded, and once they got it down to, you know, 3 or 4 in that first half, we'd bump it back up to 9 or 10, and kind of the same way there in the second half after they get it to 2. You know, we get a couple calls that don't go our way early and miss some shots, and they're able to get a couple shots to go, and all of a sudden it's a 2-point game. But I didn't think our kids faltered at all. I thought they maintained their energy, kind of what we're doing. Did not hang their head, which is something, you know, you're talking a year ago, that's what we did a lot of. So just the maturity in it and you know, able to finish because of that.
So Beloit, the nice win last night, and now get Council Grove coming up on Thursday, and we'll have that boys game on Z96.3 Lake. You want to let people know the plans on Thursday and Friday for where you're going to be?
Yeah, Thursday, 1A Division 1 Sylvan Lucas Substate on Kitty Country 94, as we'll have Lakeside against Sylvan Lucas. That'll actually be the 7:30 game. We'll start with Osborne against Rollins County on the boys' side there at 6 o'clock, and then Lakeside Sylvan Lucas at 7. And then Friday we'll have semifinals on the girls' side as well from the Class 1A Division 1 Substate. I'm taking it one day at a time, so I forgot the schedule and I don't have it in front of me, but Sylvan Lucas girls are playing against Rollins County at, I believe, 7:30. Osborne against Decatur Community at 6 o'clock on the girls' side on Friday. So that's the schedule for Friday on Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com. Both nights we'll have pregame coverage around 5:50 and get things rolling at 6 o'clock for boys on Thursday, girls Friday semifinals, and the finals coming up on Saturday. We hope to have some games there, and we know that at least there will be some local teams playing in those games, so we'll have those hopefully on Saturday, get you set for the championship games as well. So a lot of hoops coming up on Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Absolutely. Well, we hope so on Saturday. Technically, yeah. We don't know all of the we might have a lot, we might not have a lot, we just have to wait and see. But we hope so. We usually do, so we hopefully don't jinx any of that. And then hopefully we'll have teams to cover at state coming up next week as well. Okay. The K-State men's basketball team is starting to remind me of the Nebraska Cornhusker football team. I keep hearing how good they are, well, they're tournament worthy, they're a tournament team. Nebraska football, well, they're just bad luck, and they're much better than them. They're the best 3-9 team in America. Well, that makes you feel good. K-State men, they're the best 14-15 team in America. Who cares? They've lost 15 games. They're 14-15. Last night, a great effort again, but again, another close loss.
Pack will pick it up near midcourt. Now he's in full flight, driving. Passes into the backcourt. Picked up by Miguel. 8-7-6. Red Raiders up by 5. Shot blocked for a moment. Tipped up in the air. Taken and saved to Arms. Good night.
18-0 at home. Unbelievable.
First time in school history, the Red Raiders are undefeated at home. The streak continues. 73-68.
Texas Tech finishes a perfect home record, 18-0. K-State playing without second leading scorer Marquise Noel, who leads the Wildcats in both assists and steals, and second leading scorer. And K-State battled back for an 8-point deficit. Actually led on a pair of free throws by sophomore Selton Miguel with 1:25 to play. But then the Red Raiders made key plays down the stretch. Big jumper by Davian Warren gave the lead for good. Then there was they didn't show a replay when Magura went for a steal. I don't know if that was a foul or not. They didn't show the replay. They showed a play earlier where Texas Tech, I thought, didn't foul Selton Miguel when he got his two free throws. I thought it was a principle of verticality. They showed that replay four times. They didn't show the replay of McGurl. I thought it was a clean – I thought it was he has a right 50-50 ball. I don't think that should have been a foul. I thought that was a steal. That was a huge call win against K-State. Nigel Pack got fouled on the three-point shot. I mean, they came across his arm. I mean, it was clearly a foul. It was not called. Now, I don't want to get into blaming officials because I think K-State fans are – I'll say it. I'll be honest. I think K-State fans are some of the worst when it comes to complaining about every single call imaginable. Like, it's just amazing. Like, every single call imaginable is just major overreaction. Like, I do feel like there are some fan bases that feel like they're the victim more so than other fan bases. Having said that, I think those calls did go against K-State. And I do think that they got a bit of a call when Miguel was blocked, and I thought it was clean, and he got two free throws. So if you're going to complain about a couple of calls that went against you, you have to – well, you don't have to because, you know, you got your certain color glasses on. But if you're objective enough, you can understand, listen, there's some calls that went for us, some calls that went against us. But those are two calls that went against K-State down the stretch. Why was Noel not playing? I didn't hear. I didn't guess.
He hurt his hamstring apparently late against Iowa State.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So he was out, and that was a valiant effort. You're playing without one of your best players. You go to Texas Tech, a place where I think a lot of people thought K-State would get rolled. They're right there. They have a lead with about 105 to go. But once again, they can't finish games. And they're 3-7 in games decided by 5 points or less. Actually, 3-8, and they're 3-7 in Big 12 play, and they have been tied or led in the second half of 7 of their 11 conference losses. Mike McGurl with 18 points to lead the way. He played all 40 minutes, and K-State ends up losing another close one. Here's Bruce Weber on the loss.
They played their butts off and against one of the best teams in the country on their court, where they beat everybody pretty soundly, and obviously, we're right there like we've been all year. Beat them the first time and competed with them here, but we just didn't. We did everything except win tonight.
It just feels like Groundhog Day all over again, like Scott Frost even mentioned in a press conference this year in Nebraska football. Nebraska football, we're close, but we find ways to not win. K-State, we're close. Great effort. The guys keep fighting, but yet the same result continues to happen. That's not something that's a coincidence. That's at least my belief.
No, it's not at all. It's what you are. I mean, yes. How many times we say that about sports teams, especially when you get to this point of the season? You are what you are. Yep. And that K-State is a team that can't finish off close games. No. I mean, they can. Not enough, though.
No.
I mean, they've done it, but not. And I just still don't know exactly what they're doing at the end of game situations when they need buckets that they're trying to win at the end. And there's still things that are issues there that all come back to coaching for me. So,
well, once again, I'm watching this game, and the last two of the last three possessions, Pack just comes down the floor and is jacking a three.
Yeah.
There's no pass the ball, run a set, run a place, cross screen, down screen, curl, lob, alley-oop. It's just Nigel Pack comes down the floor with the ball in his hands and chucks a three. I mean, that's not very hard to coach.
No.
You just say, hey, Nigel, just come down and jack a three. I'm
hard to defend either if they're not going to do anything.
Right. And Bruce Weber is a very good coach. And I find it hard to believe that Bruce Weber doesn't have anything, you know, drawn up in situations like this. I know he does. The question is, are his kids just not listening very well? Are they bad at executing? And if they're bad at executing, that still falls on the coaches because the coach is supposed to get the best out of their players. So it works hand in hand. But, you know, K-State makes, you know, really good plays. They get themselves in games. They can rally from deficits. They can play well enough to have a big lead over KU at home. And then when it comes down to crunch time, when it comes down to winning time, it becomes losing time for K-State. And it's so frustrating. And like I said, K-State men's basketball is a lot like Nebraska football. Like every game, you're like, okay, this is the game where Nebraska's going to figure it out. They're going to pull it out. I mean, oh, what do you know? Special teams let them down. And with K-State, oh, what do you know? They got a bad shot with under a minute to play and didn't run anything.
Yeah. I just don't know. And I'm reading, and Kellis covers the team, and I know he's trying hard to make things positive, right? But he had a tweet last night that it was like, this team, one thing you can count on with this team is they play with their well with their backs against the wall. And I'm like, do they though? I mean, yeah, they
the
might
the last
make,
two games they have to win.
They might
lost.
Make comebacks, but they lost with their backs against the wall at home against Iowa State.
Yes.
They had a 9-point lead in the first half of this game. And yeah, they fought and got the lead back with under a minute and a half left in the game last night. But I'm like, they didn't finish. Do they finish well with their backs against the wall? And do they play well with their backs against the wall? I'm like, Kellis, you're trying hard, I know.
Yeah, well, he's the beat reporter.
And you got to make it look good.
Sure.
And, you know, he had a tweet where K-State's record is 4-8 if it would with these kind of games or whatever. And he's like, if it was 8-4, they'd be a tournament team. And I'm like, no kidding.
No kidding.
There's no doubt about it. If you're talking about right now that they're on the bubble.
Yeah, well,
before
right.
They were 4-8 and 4-7 in these games. And obviously, they flip that around, their tournament team. And I'm just like reading all this stuff, and I'm like, you're trying to make us feel good, but this doesn't make us feel good. It's all stuff that's not even real true. It is true that if they go 8-4 instead of 4-8 in games decided by 5 points or less or whatever it is, that yeah, they're a tournament team. There's no doubt about that. But the fact is, they're 4-8, and they're not a tournament team.
Every team in America can use an argument like that.
Exactly.
They can say, well, you know, if we don't lose those two buzzer beaters, we would have two more wins. Or, you know, if the Chiefs would have played good offense for three quarters instead of just two, they'd be Super Bowl champions. I mean, we could play this game until we're blue in the face.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, you're 14-15, and when your backs are against the wall, I don't agree with that at all.
I don't either. I saw the tweet, and I'm like, I sent it to our group. I'm like, he's trying so hard here, but it's just not.
He's trying so hard, but it kind of insults your diehard fans in a way. And he's not trying to do that. And Kellis is a good dude. He's trying to do his job. I get it, but you're trying too hard. When their back's against the wall, I mean, honestly, when they were getting ready for the Oklahoma State on the road, that game, we said, this is where it starts. Here's what you've got to do. To make the tournament, K-State is going to have to do what? They're going to have to beat Oklahoma State on the road, beat Iowa State, and then beat Oklahoma in their finale. And if they go 3-2, even if they lose at KU and Texas Tech, they've got a decent chance to make the tournament. All right? So what have they done since their backs are against the wall or when they really needed to come through? Lost at Oklahoma State in overtime. Lost to KU and gave up 102 points. Lost to Iowa State at home after leading early 11-2 and had a possession where they didn't get off a shot down 2 with 16 seconds to go when their backs were against the wall. And Texas Tech last night, where they had to win, you know, to make the tournament more than likely, unless they win the Big 12 tournament. Their backs against the wall. Yeah, they fought and everything. At the end of the day, they lost. So according to what I've got here, the backs against the wall,
0-4.
So no, they're not doing well with their backs against the wall.
No.
Because it doesn't matter if you lose by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 30 points. The bottom line is you've lost.
You lost.
That's what you're judged upon. So you don't get extra credit for losing close instead of getting blown out. You get nothing for that. Zip. You know, the K-State sports story says that, let me put it here. Where is it at? Oh, yes. Texas Tech 18-0, and Texas Tech all but two of their wins at home in Lubbock by double figures. However, it was the Wildcats who gave them their toughest test of the season, as the 5-point loss was the closest in their 18 home victories. Congratulations. Show them what K-State's won. Oh, yeah. Nothing!
Do you want a cookie?
Congratulations. Here's your participation medal. Dear goodness gracious. If that's that's the only positive you can come out of it. Well, we didn't lose as bad as everybody else in Texas Tech. Oh, goodness. You talk about grasping at straws. I know about trying to color at a certain color, but dear Lord, K-State is a losing team. Literally, they are 14-15. They're 6-11 in the Big 12. The best they can do is 7-11. That to me is not good enough to make a tournament. Well, obviously, 14-15 is
definitely not.
But I'm talking even 7-11 in your conference is not good enough. I don't think any team that's four games under 500, and that's assuming they beat Oklahoma on Senior Day, and that'll be on Saturday at 3 o'clock at Bramlage. They're not good enough. They're not a tournament team. You and I said all along we didn't think they were, and they've proven that to be true, and we wish we were wrong. We had other people telling us, oh, this is a tournament team. Tournament team at 14-12. We're like, really? This team, 14-12, is a tournament team? Really? They have one marquee win. That's it. They have one marquee win.
Yeah.
That's Texas Tech at home. That's their only really awesome win. Do they have some other decent wins? Yeah, at Texas is a good win. Although Texas has lost multiple times at home this year, so it's decent. You won at TCU. I was okay, but they're a bubble team. I mean, I'm grasping at straws here. I really got nothing except for Texas Tech.
There's never been anything there except for Texas
and nothing in the non-con
that helps them in that aspect. I mean, the Texas thing actually does help, like a net ranking if you're trying to get if you're at an actual bubble team trying to get into the tournament. But I've never bought that. And they've proven it the last four games. I don't care what the deficits of these games are. I don't care how the games went. I don't care. I don't care. You lost four in a row with your backs against the wall.
When your season's
on
the line.
Team. Yes. Your season is on the line. You're considered at this point at 14-11 a bubble team.
Yeah.
And you have lost four games in a row. All of them you had opportunities except KU to pick up a win, and you didn't win them. No. And that's all that matters.
Right.
Absolutely all that matters.
No question. And here's the other thing is right now, they're not even a postseason team. They have a losing record.
They can't get into the NIT
for crying out loud.
No.
So we're sitting here talking about, oh, this is a tournament team. They're not even an NIT tournament team right now. So, yeah, another really tough loss. And Nebraska football fans and K-State men's basketball fans should get together and drink away their sorrows with responsibility. Okay? Jeez. Baylor wins last night. I was sitting there feeling good about my predictions, and then Texas, leave it to Texas to, blow it. Texas, ranked 21st, lost at home to Baylor. Baylor now 25-5, and they're 13-4, just behind KU in the standings. Texas falls at 10-7 in the Big 12, 21-9. And, Texas now gets the rest up for their final game of the year at Lawrence on Saturday. And KU's got to play two games between now and then.
Mm-hmm.
KU plays TCU tonight on the road, and then Thursday they play TCU at home. That's a makeup game from the game that was postponed to start the season. KU playing their senior night on Thursday. And if you're talking about the danger games, well, clearly the danger game right off the bat is tonight on the road. I mean, KU doesn't usually lose back-to-back games. I know KU hasn't been super awesome on the road in regards to the ranked teams, but TCU is not a ranked team. And TCU got their marquee win over Texas Tech recently. And so I think they're probably feeling pretty good about themselves. I like KU to win tonight. KU 23-5, 12-3, and they're only dropped from number 5 to number 6 in the national polls because the top 6 teams all lost. Baylor jumped all the way from 10 to 3, which I have people all riled up about that. Like, my KU fans are riled up that Baylor jumped all the way to 3. They just beat you. They just beat you. And I know you split your meetings, but Baylor's 25-5. Kansas is 23-5. Technically, Baylor's got the better record. And there's a recency bias as to that was the game we last saw. If KU if KU just beat Baylor, then clearly KU would be, probably jumping from 10 to 3 just like Baylor did. So, there's no need to get all riled up about it. I got people fired up because KU now is off the one line, according to some bracketologists. First of all, these are bracketologists that have no input with the NCAA tournament and their selection committees. So let's not worry about that either. Here's the thing. There is no need to worry, in my opinion. Like, it's okay to think about and say, well, we're probably going to have to win 3 out of 4 to get a 1 seed, or we need to win out to get a 2 seed, or we got to do this to get a 4 seed. That I totally get. But if you're getting worried about what Joe Lunardi and a whole bunch of other guys that I don't know played any athletics ever in their life are, in which, I shouldn't say that's a big deal if they're smart enough to do bracketology, I guess. But that's become, it's become something just out of control at times. Everybody's got a bracketologist now. What are we, doctors? So we get these bracketology guys sitting here trying to tell us that, well, okay, with that, with those six teams all losing, Baylor moves to a 1 and KU drops to a 2. But other people have KU on the 1 line, and they had Auburn jumping off the 1 and going to a 2. And here's the thing. There's still a lot of basketball to be played. KU's got to play 3 games this week. Then you got the Big 12 tournament. Let me tell you something. If KU goes through this week and next week in the Big 12 tournament and they only lose 1 game, okay, whether it's they lose to Texas Saturday but they win the Big 12 tournament, or they win out and lose in the semifinals of the Big 12 tournament, as long as they don't lose 2 games, and I would argue if they lose 2 games, they still could be a number 1 seed. But if Kansas wins the Big 12 title outright, which some people think is the toughest conference in America, and Kansas doesn't lose twice between now and the end of the Big 12 tournament, there's no need to worry. They will be a 1 seed. Mark my words. Kansas will be a number 1 seed. Mark my words. And just because Baylor's ranked ahead of Kansas doesn't mean that Baylor will be a higher seed in the tournament.
Yeah.
That's not how they judge it. Is, oh, well, Baylor's ranked 3rd. I got to give them a 1 seed. Gonzaga 1 year was ranked in the top 10 and got a 6 seed.
They were number 6.
They were number 6 and got a 6 seed. All right, we've seen Wichita State ranked in the top 15, getting like a 6 seed themselves. So it's there's no reason to get all mad and riled up, in my opinion, because of some guy sitting on his couch punching some buttons on a computer saying, oh, hey, you know what? Baylor just beat KU head-to-head. I'm going to put Baylor in the 1 seed and KU on a 2. The second thing about KU fans being riled up about whether KU is a 1 seed or not, has a 1 seed really guaranteed KU a lot?
No.
I would argue they're better off being a 2 or a 3 or a 4 in some of their successful years. They rarely get it done as a 1 seed. And when you're the 1 seed, the expectations are, obviously, make the Final 4. If you're a 1 seed, you should, right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to tell you something. If somebody wants to get riled up about the rankings and they want to talk about the seed lines, why is Kentucky still behind Kansas? I mean, Kentucky just lost. Well, okay, Kansas just lost. Kentucky has one more loss than Kansas and punked Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse. And I'm not a John Calipari fan. I'm not a Kentucky Wildcat fan. But I'm being objective here. Kansas fans would be screaming bloody murder if they were ranked right behind Kentucky, having whipped them in Rupp. I mean, KU fans would be crying bloody foul. And KU fans there are some KU fans riled up because they're off the 1 line, according to some bracketologists, which is fine. That's your opinion. You can get riled up if you want. I think you're going to stress out for no reason because at the end of the day, they're going to be a 1. Even if they aren't, it's not the end of the world, for crying out loud. Everybody talked about how the Chiefs, oh, dear Lord, the Chiefs aren't going to be the number 1 overall seed. And I tried to tell people, dude, Tennessee ain't going to be in the AFC title game anyway, so don't worry about it. Then all of a sudden, they get beat. Well, now everything's on equal playing field. Guess what? Home field advantage is so, so damn important, right? And then the Chiefs lost a 21-3 lead at home. So guess what? We all riled up and got worried about nothing because it wasn't as important as we thought it was. We really, really, truly thought, well, the Chiefs, you know, at home, they're going to make the Super Bowl because it goes through Arrowhead again, and Tennessee got beat by Cincinnati. And like I've been trying to tell people during the football playoffs and prior to the football playoffs, you don't have to have the 1 seed to make the Super Bowl. Is it nice to have? Sure, but there's no guarantees you get that 1 seed, you're going to the Super Bowl. No guarantee if you're at home, you're going to go to the Super Bowl. And we saw that numerous times. The Buccaneers lost at home to the Rams, for crying out loud. So it happened in both conferences. The Packers lost to the 49ers. How'd that 1 seed treat the Packers? Not very well. Both seeds lost in the first round. So my point being is that KU fans get riled up about, well, we need to be a 1 seed. Well, let's go look at history. Being a 1 seed doesn't, honestly, KU has not done very well as a number 1 seed and making it to the Final Four. Have they made a Final Four as a 1 seed before? Yes, that's happened multiple times. That is true. But there have been many times they haven't. Many times they've been upset in the second round or maybe the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight and don't get to the Final Four. So just because you're a 1 seed doesn't guarantee you anything. Nothing at all. So if Kansas gets the 1 seed, great. If they're a 2 seed, big deal. But Kansas fans are all riled up, or not all, but there's some that are riled up because they're on the 2 line. You should be thankful you're ahead of Kentucky on the seeding criteria right now, because I don't think you should be. So just let it play out. Don't freak out like some radio people in Kansas City are freaking out when the Chiefs lost to the Bengals in the regular season. Oh, no, we're not going to have home field advantage. It's like, dear Lord, do you think Tennessee is guaranteed to be in the AFC title game? And we found out, what do you know? They weren't. So don't overreact. And it's easy to overreact. That's what we do in society every single day. Knee-jerk reactions. We just react. We don't even think before we react. Kansas will be just fine. They're going to be a one or a two seed. They'll be no worse than a two seed. Unless they fall apart here, they will be no worse than a two seed. They've got a terrific resume. They got tons of quadrant one wins. And if they get a share of the Big 12 title, which is virtually a certainty, I would imagine, unless they fall apart. And I think they'll still get the Big 12 title outright. But even if they tie or even if they win it outright, Kansas will be a number one seed come NCAA tournament time. Mark my words, they will be. And if they aren't, oh no, what is wrong? How in the world is Kansas going to make it a Final Four as a two seed? That's just virtually impossible.
It's possible.
It's very possible. Very, very possible.
Possible for anybody to make.
By the way,
no matter what your seed is, doesn't really matter.
By the way, only one time in NCAA tournament history have all four number one seeds made it to the Final Four. So that tells you one seeds aren't guaranteed anything. And that was 2008 when Kansas was one of those four number one seeds. So Kansas went to the final national championship game against Kentucky back in 2012. I was there for that game. They were a two seed that year. Mm-hmm. They were not a one seed. Kansas, when they made it to the Final Four and played Villanova, I believe they were the two seed because they beat Duke and Omaha. I don't think Kansas was the one seed in that one. You might have to double check that. Look that up. 2018, yeah. I think KU was the two seed. I think Duke was the one. But I don't think they were the one. I'm pretty sure Kansas wasn't the one because I think we talked that year about how they might even been a three, but I think they were a two that year. But we talked about how it's maybe better not to be the number one seed. And some KU fans are freaking out. Oh, God, Duke's in our bracket. And then, what do you know, KU beat Duke in overtime in a great game up in Omaha. 2018.
Yeah, I'm almost there. They were the one, actually.
KU was the one in 2018?
Yeah, they beat Duke.
Ah, they were. I remember that team wasn't. A lot of people talked about how they weren't really, they didn't think they were a one seed. Okay, so they did get a one seed. So 2012 and 2018, 2012 they were a two seed. So 2018 they're a one, 2008 they're a one. So the last, well, the only three Final Fours that Bill Self has gone to at Kansas, which there should be more than three with all the great seeds they've had, they only have been to Final Four three times. They've been in the national title game twice. They won it as a one seed when they beat the other one seeds in San Antonio. They were a two seed, lost to Kentucky in a national championship game in New Orleans. In 2018 in San Antonio again, they lost in the Final Four to Villanova. They were a one seed. So two of the 3 years that Bill Self has been to the Final Four, they were one seeds. Okay, so that is true. They did make it as a two seed. That is also true. What I'm trying to tell you is how many number one seeds has Kansas had? I think it's like 10 or 12. Yeah. Under Bill Self, it's a ton. Yeah. And they've only been to the Final Four twice as a number one seed. Like, I got to pull that up as well. KU, number one seeds since 2000. Let's do that. Let's see. So let me pull it up. And this would be fun if it pulls it up here. Okay, so Bill Self took over in 2004. All right? So here you go. You ready?
Yeah.
Bill Self has never been worse than a four seed, which is insane.
I did know that.
2004. Well, let's go back even further. Let's go back even further. 1986, Kansas made the Final Four with Danny Manning in 86 as a one seed. 1988, they won the national championship as a six seed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In 1991, they made it to the national title game, lost to Duke. They were a three seed. 1993, 2 years later, lost to North Carolina in the Final Four. They were a two seed. Let's see here. 2002, they were a one seed, went to the Final Four, lost to Maryland. 2003, they were national runner-up to Syracuse. They were a two seed as they beat Arizona, who was the one that year. National champions, a one seed. National runner-up or a two seed, like I said, in 2012. In 2018, they were a one seed. So let me go through this. You ready? Let's go ahead and keep track of this for me. For KU and their number one seeds. So 1986, they were a one seed. They made the Final Four. So you can put Final Four, whatever you want to do. The next time they were a one seed, they lost in the second round. So note that. Second round as a one. Then they went Sweet 16 as a one. Lost in the Sweet 16. Lost in Sweet 16 again in 97 as a one. 1998, lost in the second round as a one. 2002, made it to the Final Four as a one. 2007, lost the Elite Eight to UCLA as a one. UCLA was a two. 2008, national champs as the worst one seed, but they were the one. 2010, they were number one seed, I believe number one overall, lost to Northern Iowa in the second round. So a second round exit. 2011, number one seed, playing an 11 seed in the Elite Eight and lost to VCU. So that one seed really guaranteed you a lot there. 2013, KU number one seed, Sweet 16. 2016, KU number one overall seed, lost in Elite Eight. 2017, number one seed, lost in the Elite Eight. 2018, number one seed, made the Final Four. Of course, COVID year, they would have been a one seed, but we have no idea what would happen. Tournament was canceled. Mm-hmm. And this year, they will probably be a one seed. How many one seeds is that?
14.
Yeah. And how many times did they go to the Final Four? 2 out of 14?
Yeah.
Okay, 2 out of 14. So Kansas, with 14 number one seeds, has been to the Final Four 2 times. So if you're all caught up in this crazy stuff about we got to have a one seed, only 14% of the time Kansas has a one seed, they make the Final Four. We're not even talking winning at all. We're talking make the Final Four. That is probably the worst percentage of any organization since 1986. And I'm counting 86 when they were a one and made it. That helps them. Since 1986, Kansas, as a one seed, has only made a Final Four 2 times. That can't be right. 86, they made a Final Four as a one. 2018 made it as one. 2008 made it as one.
3 times. Sorry, three times.
So 3 out of 14. All right. So 3 out of 14.
I forgot this last one.
Okay. So 3 out of 14. So that's 21%. So as a one seed, KU has a 1 in 5 chance to make the Final Four. A 1 in 5 chance. All right. You ready for two seeds? Let's do two seeds real quick.
Okay.
Okay. So two seeds. 1990, they're a two seed, lost in the second round. 1993, two seed made the Final Four. 1996, two seed made the Elite Eight. 2003, two seed made the Final Four, lost the national title game. 2012, two seed, national runner-up, made the Final Four. 2014, a two seed lost second round. 2015, two seed lost second round. How many two seeds is that?
3, 7.
And how many times made the Final Four?
3. And 2 national championship appearances.
I'm getting all choked up. Sometimes facts really hurt people. So KU has been a 2 seed. Let me get this right, because I got to send this to my buddy, because he's been really riled up about how KU is now not on the one line. So KU has been a 1 seed 14 times since 1986. And they have made it to the Final Four 3 times, which is 21% of the times they've been a 1. They've made it. So a 1 in 5 chance for KU basketball when they're a 1 seed.
They did win the national championship one of
those
times.
They have a national title, but that's the only time.
Oh, wait. Actually, I didn't write FF by NC, so they've actually been to the four Final Fours as a 1. Sorry, I was
about. You're not helping me here
sorry,
at all.
Sorry, I was looking at.
At all.
I was looking at FFs, and then that throws me off on what they did on an NC. So it's actually 4 times. As the number one. You said 2 at first, and then that threw me off, made me not even think about going to the third FF that
86
I had.
Was a Final Four as a 1. So 2002, Final Four as a 1. So 4.
Yeah.
So,
you said right. 2 right off the bat when we stopped talking about it, so I stopped looking.
Well, I was talking under the Bill Self era.
Yeah.
And then I went back, and Roy Williams.
Yeah. Well, even when we got done with all the whole thing that we went through, you're like, so what is that, 2 Final Fours? And I didn't see the last.
That's
FF
all right.
Had,
I'll do so. All my work on my own since Dusty is
I'm trying to help, but you threw me off. Yeah,
he's trying to help, but blaming me that I messed it up. So 4 out of 14. So that's 29%.
Yeah.
29%, which means you have a 3 in 10 chance. All right. Let me revise these numbers. And then how many national title games did they go to as a 1 seed?
As a 1 seed, they only made it to the one that they won.
So that was
based
national
on what
title.
You told me
okay.
And all that,
so
yeah.
Then as a 2, let's double check our numbers. So
as a 2, it is 3 Final Fours and 2 national championship appearances.
Okay, so 2 national championship appearances, 3 Final Fours as a 2, and they were a 2 seed 7 times, right?
Yes.
So 3 divided into 7 is 43% of the time. Well, that still helps my argument, though. It's all good.
It's still better. There's still no better. Doubt about that, yeah.
And they've been the 3 Final Fours – So, and when they, and they've been to four Final Fours, 29%. So that's 43%, as I said, in a national championship game. Only one time as a number one seed has Kansas. Is that right? Syracuse was runner-up in 2003, so that's two national championship games. And then the one – yeah, that's right. So, what I'm telling you, KU fans, here we go. You're going to be a one or a two. You actually have more success being a number two seed in NCAA tournament since 1986. And I'm even giving you 1986 when you're a one seed.
Yeah.
If I took that out of the, if I took that out of the equation, if I simply just went the Bill Self era, this really adds to my argument completely. You take away, like, if you start with a Bill Self era from 2004, all right, and let's go ahead. What do we eliminate here? We eliminate a national runner-up in 2003. We eliminate a 2002 Final Four, and we eliminate a 93 Final Four, and we eliminate a 86 Final Four, and 88 or 60 in national championship. So Bill Self, as a two seed, he has been national runner-up as a two seed, and he's had three two seeds, Bill Self has had, national runner-up and two second-round exits. So that hurts the argument of being a two seed somewhat. As a one seed, Bill Self, Elite Eight. I mean, they've been to a lot of Elite Eights.
Yeah.
Four Elite Eights, but not the Final Four very often. National Champions 08, 2012, 2018, but 12 was a two seed. So only two times under Bill Self has KU been to the Final Four as a one seed. Two times, and that was 18 and 08. And in between 2008 and 18, he had one, two, three, four, five one seeds and didn't make it to the Final Four. So he was 0-5 during that stretch until they made it in 2018. So what I'm trying to tell you is a one seed, I would guess for most programs, I would guess it's much more beneficial for Duke. It's probably been more beneficial for Kentucky than it has been for Kansas. It's probably been more beneficial for North Carolina. Kansas has not taken advantage of being that one seed, and they've had it a ton of times. They only have gone since 1986, 14 number one seeds since 86, and they've been to only four Final Fours out of those 14 one seeds. But yet they've been a two seed seven times, and they've been to three Final Fours. So it is very interesting when you look at it, and I knew based on my memory bank that KU's better usually as a two or a three than they are a one, based on the success they have. And I think the other thing that sticks in my head is when you're a one seed and you lose and don't make the Final Four, there's just so much more bitter disappointment because you are expected to be there. Whereas when you're a two or a three or a four, it's like, well, you know, we are two, but we lost to the one Elite Eight. You know, that happens sometimes. But Kansas has been the favorite in many of those Elite Eights. 2017, trying to remember, was that the Oregon Elite Eight in Kansas City where they lost? I think it was. That was 2017. They were the favorite. They were in Kansas City. I think that was 17 against Oregon. 16. I'm trying to remember who it was they lost the Elite Eight to. Was that VCU?
Six. Nah, that VCU was before that.
No, that was before
that.
Yeah. That was 2011. That's right. 2011 was VCU.
Yeah. Oregon was 17.
Who was 16? Yeah. I'm trying to remember 16. Who can you lose to in 16?
Go back to the.
So Oregon, they were a favorite at home. They're basically at home. They're at Kansas City, and they laid an egg. And Devontae Graham.
Michigan,
make a shot.
I think, it was 16. I couldn't.
No. That was Sweet 16. Michigan was 16. 16. That's when they blew the game. And
that was Villanova in 16.
Oh yeah, that was the, you know, had the phantom foul on Graham. Ooh. Graham was involved there too. So 16 lost Villanova. Villanova, I think, went on to win it that year. 17, they ended up losing Oregon. They were the favorite in that game. 16, they would have been the favorite, too, obviously, as a one seed. 2013, one seed lost Sweet 16. 2011, lost to VCU in the Elite Eight. 2010, lost to Northern Iowa in the second round. 2007, lost the Elite Eight to UCLA, but that was on the West Coast. It was kind of like UCLA was the de facto one, but they gave the UCLA to two, but then they hosted. Mm-hmm. I can't really hold that against KU too much in 07. And that set the table for winning it all in 2008. It is pretty amazing Bill Self has had no worse than a four seed in every year he's been at KU. But considering all the great seeds he's had, you can see why there have been people with a knock on Bill Self. And if he doesn't win the title in 2008, I don't know if Bill Self is the head coach right now at KU.
Yeah, yeah. It's easier for me to process all that and for KU fan to process it if you just look at Bill Self era, right? And understand that they've only been to two Final Fours as a one seed, and they've had multiple one seeds. You know, they've had eight of them under Bill Self. So it's like that's the, you know, two out of eight under Bill Self is 25%, right?
Yeah.
And so it's lower than the number that we had out of the one seed since 1986. That actually does go lower percentage-wise. Bill Self is a one seed. Now he's one out of three as a two seed,
right,
making it to the Final Four. So.
So two out of eight. So when you do the math here, as a one seed, you should be at least 50%, in my opinion. If you're a number one seed, you should make it the Final Four half the time, which is maybe not asking too much. Should be even more, maybe. But 50% of the time, and they've been there 25% of the time. It goes back to the Chiefs. The Chiefs have had four straight AFC title games at home. That's awesome. They're 500. They're 2-2. It should be at least 3-1. If you're at home, you should have the advantage. They should at least be 3-1 in those AFC title games. So we can sit here and go, well, home court's a huge deal. The number one seed's a huge deal. But the Chiefs have proven that home field advantage doesn't guarantee everything. And, of course, the Jayhawks have confirmed that getting a one seed doesn't guarantee anything. And that's why I laugh when KU folks tell me, well, if it wasn't for COVID, we wouldn't have won a national title. No, I'm convinced you wouldn't have. You've been the one seed, and you would have lost to somebody you shouldn't have. I mean, that's just the way the track record shows. So how do you possibly say as a KU fan, we would have won it all in 2020 if it wasn't for COVID? Okay, you're the number one overall seed. Well, you've been the number one overall seed before. You were in 2016. You were in 2010, and you didn't even get out of the first weekend.
Yeah, the odds are even further down when you're the overall number one seed under Bill Self.
Yes. Even Kentucky, number one overall seed that was undefeated, didn't win the national title. They made it to the Final Four, though. I will give them that. So don't get all caught up in the seeding. It's not maybe as big a deal as you may think. Last night, well, first of all, women's basketball, let's get to the Big 12. The K-State women will be in action tomorrow as they will host West Virginia, and KU women will host Texas tomorrow night. And also, we can tell you that there's this guy. Who do you think is the most exciting player in the NBA? And most people would say, well, Steph Curry, obviously, you know, or well, maybe even LeBron or Kevin Durant. No. The most exciting guy in the NBA is Ja Morant. And he stuck it to Dusty's Spurs last night.
Miss by Walker. Rebound by Adams, his sixth. Morant blows by Primo. Attack! Oh! Holy cow! That is unbelievable! Oh, wow! Murray, one of two.
The bench still stands.
Adams going long. Morant!
Ja Morant for the Memphis Grizzlies. And by the way, the Grizzlies are a three seed in the West, and they have a chance to pass the Warriors to be the two seed. A lot of people don't maybe know that about the NBA. The Grizzlies are coming on. They're young. They're exciting. Ja Morant can jump out of the gymnasium. Mm-hmm. He joked about the dunk contest. He said, well, I think I'd participate if they move it to 11 feet high because it's too easy at 10 feet. Last night, the first highlight you heard, and you got to see it, it is one of those – hide the mother and children, get out of the way, Kevin Harlan calls, because he dunked it from behind the restricted circle and right in the face of a big guy for the Spurs.
Jakupoto, he's like one of the best shot blockers in the league.
Oh, dear Lord. That's a poster. It was unbelievable. And,
yeah, that didn't work out for him that time.
Unbelievable. Maybe the better play was catching it at 0.4 seconds, fading away on the baseline, hitting that long jumper to close out the first half. That was sensational athleticism. The kid is a freak. It's like he's on a trampoline when he jumps, but he doesn't have a trampoline. That's how springy he is. And I am so pleased with my, because I'm always kicking myself. Oh, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I buy that? Why didn't I get a ticket for this? That's too late. The price went up. I didn't do that. Last week, I was looking at the schedule. I'm like, oh, Ja Morant and the Grizzlies are going to be OKC to play the Thunder. Now, the Thunder aren't very good, so I ain't going to watch the Thunder. I'm going to see Ja Morant because I want to see Luka in person. But Luka doesn't fit with my schedule when they come to OKC. And I looked. I'm like, oh, hey, you know what? Coming up on March 13th, Ja Morant's going to be in OKC. And I looked at tickets, and there were some really good deals there a week prior. And I waited, and then they went up a little bit. I'm like, you know what? They're going to keep going up if he keeps playing great. So I went ahead and bought tickets so I can take a few of my boys to the game when we go down to OKC. And then I saw last night, and I'm like, yeah, the price just went up even further on those tickets because there are going to be people in OKC, even if they're not Thunder fans, going, let's go watch Ja Morant play. Because because he is the most exciting player. Now, I hope to goodness gracious he isn't sick that day or turns his ankle and he doesn't get to play that game. I'll be very, very disappointed. But he put up 52 on the Spurs last night. And if you want to watch just an unbelievable athlete, no matter what the sport is, Ja Morant is your ticket right now. He is electrifying. And imagine, as my oldest son said, he's a big fan of him too. My oldest son said, "Dad, if he ever develops a consistent three-point shot, he will absolutely dominate this league." And I'm like, "You're right."
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He will, because that's his only kryptonite, is he's not a great outside shooter, but he's got a pretty good jump shot. It's just not from three-point land.
Yeah, he's outstanding. I mean, it's fun to watch, and he's been that way since college, right, when he broke out in the NCAA tournament there at Murray State and everybody found out who this guy was, right? And boy, he's let it ride and rolled into the next level big time.
Man, he is fun to watch. A lot of people have said, I haven't really seen a guy this athletic as a point guard doing what he's doing since Derrick Rose in his prime. And I remember Derrick Rose in his prime. That guy, unbelievable hops, and just would dunk on – he didn't matter how tall guys were. And that's what Morant does.
Mm-hmm.
I think Morant's a little – maybe slightly taller than Rose. I don't know for sure. But I would say that's a good comparison. I just hope that Morant doesn't have the horrible injuries history that Rose had, because that robbed him of a great career.
Yeah, you don't want to be that kind of remembered like that with Derrick Rose for that reason.
Not at all.
At all.
And finally, Major League Baseball and the MLB Players Association reportedly making progress towards an agreement for a new collective bargaining agreement that would end the owner-imposed lockout after a marathon negotiating session yesterday that lasted into the early morning hours. Major League Baseball had originally created a deadline of yesterday to reach an agreement before canceling regular season games. They have now pushed back that deadline. As I said yesterday on this show, they will move it back if they're close. And they won't cancel regular season games. I still think if they get a deal done by the end of the week, they won't cancel regular season games. They'll just shorten spring training, because you're not going to make as much money in spring training and the owners as you do the regular season games. And the owners care about one thing, and it's not about the fans. They don't even care about the players in many cases. They care about the almighty dollar. So I still think they're going to play a full season. I think they'll eventually get this done. They need to, for the sake of baseball, Major League Baseball, and their entity. They need to get this done. They can't afford the black eye of losing games, any regular season games, especially if they lost 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month, or even more. You just can't do it. You got other sports that are gaining in popularity. UFC's gaining on you, NASCAR, MLS soccer. You got women's sports that are getting more popular. You got more and more options as a sports fan than ever before. And the younger generation, they're not watching baseball games from start to finish. They might watch the highlights. They might watch the ninth inning. They're not into it. The younger generation isn't. And that's what baseball still never understands. The leadership of baseball doesn't get it. They treat it as if it's all about making as many dollars as I possibly can. What they don't understand is there's a long game to it. If you can go ahead and get more and more people involved in the game and keep it exciting and make some changes to alter your game and make it a little bit faster, you'd be amazed at the staying power of baseball in the future. Now, I'm not saying baseball is going to go away, but there's just so many more options. So Major League Baseball and the Players Association spent 16 hours yesterday in Jupiter, Florida, going through all these sessions. Here's what we've come to the conclusion of right now. Major League Baseball began Monday's negotiations by informing the Players Association it is willing to miss a month's worth of games and took a more threatening tone. Multiple reports several hours later said the two sides ended up agreeing on a 12-team expanded playoff format, which I argue we don't need, but that's all about the owners wanting to make more money. However, the matter of the competitive balance tax or luxury tax threshold and the relating penalties for exceeding that threshold discussion is still ongoing. More trivial matters such as defensive shifting restrictions were also reportedly part of discussions. In all, there were 13 separate face-to-face meetings between the two sides at the spring training facility yesterday. The bottom line is there's still a shred of hope. The season begins as planned on opening day, as originally scheduled on March 31st, but there's still some heavy lifting to be done today when the parties reconvene to continue their talks. So the good news is they're still talking. Bad news is there's not a deal. The good news is there's some progress. I'm not sold they're going to get it completely done. I think, obviously, there's a much better chance now. This is what baseball does all the time. Jeff Passan's been all over it, had a scathing article against the owners of Major League Baseball. If you think this is the players' fault, you don't know what you're talking about. So the owners imposed the lockout. Go read the article about Jeff Passan, ESPN. I mean, this guy and Ken Rosenthal, guys are highly respected. They're very nice guys that are very, very fair, have absolutely come out with articles ripping the owners. I mean, scathing. And it is, I mean, they flat out said, this is ridiculous. The owners had this all preconceived notion. They're going to lock out the players. After they locked out the players, they said, this will speed up the negotiations. That's what Rob Manfred said. And then Major League Baseball and their owners didn't present a proposal to the union for 42 days. How does that signify you're serious about it getting a deal done? It doesn't. And this is what Major League Baseball does, and Jeff Passan said it last night on SportsCenter. They do it all the time. Every single work stoppage in Major League Baseball, or every time they're up against a deadline, or every time the CBA expires, every single time, Major League Baseball is the exact same playbook. And that is, wait to the last possible second, and then try to then get something done. And what's really pathetic is they keep making these mistakes and they keep having these problems with the Players Association. And yeah, there's been years over the past where Players Association might be part of the problem, but this is mainly Major League Baseball and their rich owners. And it's like, wouldn't you ever learn? Like, don't you think this is a black eye for your sport over and over? Like, when anybody talks about work stoppages in professional sports and strikes, you know the first sport that pops in people's mind? Baseball.
Yeah.
The NFL's had it, the NBA's had it, but baseball's had many more situations like this. That's not the category you want to be considered number one in, is when people say, hey, when do you really think about baseball? Oh, yeah, they always strike, or they always lock out. They always have these arguments, and then they had a season canceled, and I never am going back to baseball after 94, and I still haven't. I mean, people don't say that about the NFL. They don't say that about the NBA even, and there was a lockout not too long ago with the NBA. They talk about baseball. That's the thing that baseball gets number one on the list for. The number one ranking baseball gets is being reactive instead of proactive. And this is where they're going through the song and dance again, waiting to the last minute, and they could have easily avoided all of this. And now they're getting the bad press, and that's putting pressure, I think, on some of the owners, which is good. That's rightfully so. And we'll see if they get anything done. I don't like expanding the playoffs. The owners want to expand to 14 teams, which I think waters it down tremendously, and I don't like it. I think it's okay the way it is. If you go to 12, okay, we'll see how it plays out. The players are willing to do that. There's no need to go to 14. But the reason to go to 14 is what? Money. ESPN, by expanding to 12 or 14 teams, ESPN, it's guaranteeing Major League Baseball $100 million to broadcast those extra wild card or first round games. $100 million is in the owner's pocket immediately if they agree to expand in the playoffs. And it's probably even more if they get the 14, because that's why they want 14. The owners are greedy. So let's get this right. The owners want more expanded playoff time. They want more playoffs. They want more games. They want more big primetime postseason games, TV, want to get their money. They want to get all of that, but yet they don't want to give the players more of what they want. And revenues, by the way, Major League Baseball, I read this the other day, Major League Baseball's revenues for the owners are up 30% over the last 5 years. Do you know that players' salaries have gone down the last 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you tell me how that works. In regular society, for all of you that want to rip players saying that they're rich and greedy, well, the owner's even greedier, but if you want to blame the players, this doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. Because if you worked at a bank or a car dealership, or if you worked at a grocery store, whatever the case may be, anywhere you work, and a business is making even more and more money, and you're well aware that this business is taking off, and they're making more and more money, but you never get a raise, or you don't get any kind of perks, and they keep taking advantage of you, from the standpoint of they're making more and more and more money, if you don't stand up and have your voice heard, if you don't go into the manager's office and say, listen, I demand a raise, or I would like a raise, if you never ask for it, odds are you're not going to get it. Well, that's what the players are doing. They're asking for a raise on the minimum salary. They're asking for a bit more money for minor leaguers. By the way, you know how much minor leaguers make? And I'm not saying they're poor, but minor league players, I looked it up yesterday. You know how much they make per week? The AAA players, this is the guys that are probably the closest to the big leagues, $700 a week. That's like $15 an hour, $16 an hour. And they put in more than 40 hours a week, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And then they're traveling all over the place, and yeah, they probably get some per diems or whatever. But if you do the math, that's if they got paid $700 a week every week, that's $35,000. So people sit here and think baseball players are rich. The minor leaguers aren't. Not at all. And now, if there's a high draft pick that gets a big signing bonus up front, like Bubba Starling, Bobby Witt's rich. Bubba Starling, you got a lot of money. Those guys are rich, but there's a lot of guys at AAA, AA, single A, low A ball, rookie ball, that are, and it's even worse. At A ball or rookie ball, it's $400 a week, which comes out to $20,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't even know if they get paid in the offseason that much a week. I would guess they don't, but I don't know for sure on that. But if let's assume they do. You're talking about minor league baseball salaries ranging from $15,000 to $35,000 a year, assuming they get paid every week out of 52 weeks out of the year, which I don't even know if that's for sure.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem that great. And that's what these players – and then a guy gets really, really good. And like Bobby Witt Jr. is an example. He should start opening day for the Royals. But if the Royals want to mess with the service time and try to keep him at AAA longer – to get an extra year of control which is smart based on the rules. That's what you should do. But you're punishing a guy that's ready to play in the big leagues, and he's not getting the pro salary until he gets to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And what about another guy that never got that big signing bonus like a Bobby Witt? Let's say there's a guy that was a 25th round pick that's now at AAA, and he's good enough to come up. But the Royals, let's just use the Royals as an example. I don't think the Royals do this as much as other teams, but I understand why they do it. So let's say there's a guy that's a 25th round pick. He didn't get a big signing bonus. He's making $700 a week, $30,000, $35,000 a year, which maybe for you, that's a ton of money. So be it. But it's not millions of dollars, as all these other fans try to tell me. This guy is having a really good year, a couple years, and he's been kicking butt, and he's ready. I mean, there's no doubt he's ready for the big leagues. And the Royals stay here, and I'm just using the Royals as an example. The Royals go, man, we really like this kid. We really like this guy. But you know what? We got a guy at his position right now. Let's wait one more year. Then we can jettison this guy, save on the books financially. We can bring him up on a cheaper contract, obviously, and we can get an extra year of control and eligibility. That's what the players are fighting against right now. Yeah. People think that the players are simply asking for millions of dollars to tack onto the rich players' contracts. That's not what is happening. They're also tired of teams tanking. The Marlins have tanked. The Astros benefited from tanking big time and helped them turn them into a World Series contender. Teams have tanked. They are not even trying to win. They get rid of all their best players, trade them away, get a whole bunch of young guys, and go, you know what, we're going to lose 100, 120 games. Whatever, eventually we'll be good. We'll draft high like always. And the Players Association says, wait a minute, let's have a lottery like the NBA to stop teams from tanking and automatically getting a one or number two overall pick and get the best player in the draft. No, we don't want this. This is not good for baseball. And the owners, to me, should want parity as well. The owners should want every organization to have a chance to make the playoffs. You know why the National Football League is so dang good and why it's the number one sport in America? Because year to year, you can be bad and suddenly be good. The Chiefs went from 2-14 to 11-5 in 1 year. The Rams, when they won a Super Bowl, went from 4-12 to winning the Super Bowl. It happens a lot in the pros where teams, look at the Bengals for crying out loud. They weren't good at all last year. They made it to the Super Bowl, and they're not a gigantic market. The NFL, you know, 1 year to the next, you can make moves, and you can get good enough to make the playoffs or even go to the Super Bowl and win a championship. It happens a lot. In Major League Baseball, you don't have that. You know why? Because Major League Baseball allows teams to tank. They allow them to tank. They allow them to sell off all their assets and best players, trade them off at the All-Star break or trade deadline, and then tank. And Major League Baseball Association saying this isn't good for the game. And I agree with them. And so they're saying, listen, we want more money for the minor league players. We want them to have a chance to be called up and call up when they're supposed to instead of being manipulated to stay where they are, taking advantage of a loophole and a rule that the owners have, and that was in the previous CBA. So obviously they're trying to change it, the players, and they want tanking to go away. If you're a regular baseball fan, don't you want teams to quit tanking, especially if it's yours? Don't you want them to quit tanking? Don't you want minor league players to be treated fairly to where Bobby Witt isn't held down an extra year so you don't get to see him till a year later just because they're trying to keep an extra year of service time? I mean, think about the things the players are fighting for here. And that's what fans, if they really knew what's going on, would say, yeah, I totally agree. That's what I would want too. And when you see your bosses making 30% more money in the last 5 years and you see no increases on your salaries or overall average salary, you say to yourself, well, I'm the product. They're making all this money off of me, and I'm supposed to just sit here and not ask for anything? Well, the CBA expires. This is our time to negotiate. This is our time to have our voices heard. You know, this old knock on college athletes. Well, they don't have a voice. You know, they can't get a $5 sandwich. And then the NIL, they opened it all up. And now players like Jared Casey can get an Applebee's endorsement. Well, that's been good for athletes because now they have a source of revenue, can take advantage of, you know, one shining moment like Jared Casey did in the catch against Texas for a two-point conversion to win a game in Austin. These are things that you fight for. As an employee, if you're at a big company, you should be fighting for, if you've been there a while and you know everything's going up and the company's doing well, so forth and so on, and you believe you deserve a raise, there's nothing wrong with you going into your boss's office saying, hey, I think I should get a raise, or I would really appreciate a raise, or I haven't had a raise in so long. You can do those things. Now, some people are scared because they think they're going to be fired. In today's job environment, there are not enough people to fill the jobs anyway. Mm-hmm. If there's ever a time people had more leverage to get more money in their jobs, it's now. In many industries, it's now. And the players are kind of the same boat. Like, dude, we missed games because of COVID. And there weren't fans in the stands. And now we got a chance with the CBA expiring, but we've been locked out, so the owners don't let us play. Well, we're going to stand up for what we want because we don't want this to be another 5 years of a bad deal. And that's something I read yesterday. Jeff Passan, I think, wrote it. The players are okay with sticking this out a little longer than people think because they don't want to go through another 5 years of a bad deal. Mm-hmm. They don't trust the owners. They're worried about the terminology in these new deals. They're worried about loopholes that they create. There is not a lot of trust between the players and the owners. And that does not make for a great, great working relationship. And so thus, they're starting to get talking more the last 24 hours. They might get something done. But please, please understand, when you're going to go screaming and yelling and blaming the players, you're not informed. You haven't looked up anything. You don't understand what the players are fighting for. This is the simple, easy, lazy way to think about things, is you automatically say, well, the players don't want to play. Well, first of all, that's dead wrong. They're locked out. The owners aren't letting them play. Second, the players, all they want is money. What the hell do you think the owners are doing? They want more money than the players do. The players just want their percentage, their share, their cut. But they're also, a lot of the players that they're making a lot of money, like a Max Scherzer and others, are actually saying the bigger things for us has nothing to do with my salary. Yeah, I'm making a lot of money. I'm not asking for more money myself per se. I'm saying raise the minimum salary requirements for players that make it to the big leagues. We're asking for no tanking. We're asking for parity. We're asking for every team to have a chance to win. We're asking for more support for the minor league players. Listen, Major League Baseball killed a lot of jobs and folded minor league baseball organizations last year. Guess what that did? That helped their bottom line and save even more money. So, oh, goodness, there are so many reasons why the players are doing what they're doing, and I, for one, stand behind them 100%. Now, am I going to get more behind some other place that's making $10 an hour, and they put together a great argument? I'll also stand behind them even more so, because these guys are not making $10 an hour, although minor leaguers aren't making great pay. But people need to be aware of the situation, and so many times we just comment on things we have no idea what we're talking about. And in this case, you know, all I did is take a little bit of time to read. Reading is fundamental. And the owners have brought this on themselves, and there should be a lot of pressure. And when you got national media writers that cover the baseball for ESPN and The Athletic and others that are very quiet and are right straight down the middle and straight to the vest, they're coming out with the scathing articles towards the owners, you better believe your bottom dollar, there's something wrong, and it's on the owner's side.
Yeah, it's... And I think there's part of the reason people aren't researching it is still going back to what you were talking about, where there are still people that don't really care about it. So they hear this, and they're going to blame the players.
Some people think the 94...
Yeah, I mean, and they think it's a strike, and they think it's this or this or this, but it's just like they've been at the point in baseball where they're not really paying attention to a lot of stuff that's going on, so it's automatically, if the players aren't playing games, then it's the players' fault.
It's the players' fault.
So, you know, that's where it comes, and you got to understand what's going on. And again, it is. It's about, you know, I'm always of the philosophy that I'm not going to try to talk about stuff that I am not educated on, right? Like that I don't know, I haven't at least read a little bit about to maybe form an opinion of my own. Because I think we have gotten into the point of society here where it's, I read a headline and I've made an opinion.
I got all my information I need.
Or, you know, I hear something, you know, in passing where I didn't do any research, but one person that also didn't do any research said something to me about it. And so I'm going to run with this. And it's just the misinformation gets spread that way because I didn't take time to look at it, but I figure this guy knows what he's talking about. So I'm just going to run with what he sold me. And he didn't tell me anything that was accurate or she or whoever it is, you know? And so I think we're in that situation. And I always try my best, not like if I'm on social media, if I'm on this show right here, and I'll say it multiple times to you on this show, I'll be like, I really don't know enough about it to talk about. I said that yesterday about the rest of the basketball teams in the country when we're talking about who's, you know, should be number one, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know enough about all the other teams that have played, but I can tell you about Kansas State teams that I've actually watched enough of to understand who they are. And I think we have gotten into a situation where we just don't do that anymore. And I paint that as a broad brush. Some of us do that.
Sure.
But the loud ones, it seems like, are the ones that aren't doing their research, that don't really even understand where the process is, what the process is, and how you get to the end game of it. Because right. I think they just don't, some of them don't care. But it is an easy way to spread misinformation and to get the wrong idea about things.
Absolutely. So, as the world turns with Major League Baseball, and then some people out there are probably like, I don't care, Wade. I don't give a 2 cents what those guys do. I think they're all a bunch of spoiled brats. I get it. At least you're throwing them all in the same.
Yeah.
Just don't sit here and single out the players and act like the owners are the saints here. Yeah. The owners are the bigger part of the problem. And as Jeff Passan put out yesterday, I thought it was really well put. He goes, listen, you can take the next 1,200 baseball players to replace the current 1,200 baseball players, and you have an inferior product. He said, you replace the 30 owners with 30 other rich people. It doesn't get any worse.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these owners inherited their teams. They absolutely inherited them. And then some just have a lot of money and decide it's a toy. And then others run them like businesses. And the owners only care about one thing ultimately, and that's their bottom line.
Yeah.
That's it. And if they can get away with shorting the players, they will. And the players say, well, listen, we're not that stupid. We got a great union. And that's one thing baseball players got for them. They've got a great union.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the best in sports. And maybe that's, in a roundabout way, causes even more problems for some of these stoppages because they really fight. But if I'm a Major League Baseball player, I'm very happy that I have a union that stands behind me trying to fight for what I believe is right. And the players seem to be solidified. There doesn't seem like anybody talking about, oh, why aren't we taking this deal? It's a pretty united, solidified front. So thus, baseball's got to take it seriously, or the owners will have to, you know, blow their nose 3 times a day instead of 4 times a day with Benjamins.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.